Everyone, this is the Wednesday, March 17th, 2021 morning session of the Portland City Council. Keelan, please call the roll.
Morning, Mayor. Rubio.
Here.
Ryan.
Here.
Hardesty.
Here.
Maps.
Here.
Wheeler.
Here. Under Portland City Code and State Law, the City Council is holding this meeting electronically. All members of the Council are attending remotely by video and teleconference, and the city has made several avenues available to the public to listen to the audio broadcast of this meeting. The meeting is available to the public on the city's YouTube channel, eGovPDX, www.portlandoregon.gov/video and channel 30. The public can also provide written testimony to the council by emailing the council clerk at cctestimony@portlandoregon.gov. The council is taking these steps as a result of the ongoing COVID pandemic and the need to limit in-person contact and to provide physical distancing. The pandemic is an emergency that threatens the public health, safety, and welfare and requires us to meet remotely by electronic communications. Thank you all for your continued patience, flexibility, and understanding as we work through the challenges of COVID to conduct the city's business. We'll now hear from legal counsel on the rules of order and decorum. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. To participate in council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the Council Clerk's Office for Communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. The published council agenda at portlandoregon.gov/auditor contains information about how and when you may sign up for testimony while the City Council is holding electronic meetings. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When your time is up, the presiding officer will ask you to conclude. Disruptive conduct such as shouting, refusing to conclude your testimony when your time is up, or interrupting others' testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being placed on hold or ejected from the remainder of this electronic meeting. Please be aware that all council meetings are recorded. Thank you.
Thank you. First up today, Keelan, is communications. Please invite our first individual up, item 154.
Request of May to address council regarding vandalism in the Pearl District.
Good morning.
Good morning. Can everyone hear me?
Yep, loud and clear.
Okay. Hi, good morning. Dear city officials, I prefer to be anonymous as I'm afraid of retaliation to me and my family for voicing my opinion. I'm a minority female small business owner with young children. We all have witnessed the horrific, devastating, and awful vandalization of our used to be beautiful Portland. I know the city, many nonprofit organizations, business, and the private citizens such as ourselves are trying to clean our streets, but we must do better to control the anarchist events, stop destructive vandalism, crime, and remove graffiti. We all support freedom of speech, which is one I cherish most about America, coming from a country where this was not allowed. Recent events, however, have become increasingly violent, and the sense is that there's no respect for property and safety. As an example, on Saturday, February 27th, many people dressed in black militant garb with weapons blocked our city streets and vandalized our homes, buildings, and broke windows of businesses. My children were scared and witnessed people spray painting buildings, bikes being thrown, and electric scooters being used as weapons. In one instance, a young family with children was cleaning graffiti, and the perpetrator swore at them and threatened to return to graffiti more. I walked around the Pearl District, and nearly every building had been vandalized with broken glass or graffiti. It is very similar to the violent and destructive attacks on our city that we have witnessed countless times. We are exhausted and depressed by this never-ending saga. the anarchists are conducting themselves in an entitled manner with little threat of being held accountable. If the protest is anticipated to be violent, such as the one on February 27th, then better preparations should be made. In an encouraging sign, it seems that the city and the civic leaders are increasingly moving towards stemming this endless wave of destruction and the violences as seen by the police response on Friday, March 12th. We hope that the district attorney's office will also take a stronger stance against these perpetrators. Please help us clean up our city and bring safety back to our homes and businesses. Thank you. We love Portland.
May, thank you for being here today. And you speak for many when you express your frustration and your exhaustion at this criminal destruction and violence in the city. And I want you to know you are expressing my frustration as well. If you'd like to be more directly involved, I'd encourage you to visit my website. We've got five action committees that at least two of which address this subject if you have an interest in participating. But either way, I appreciate your being here to express your opinion, and I want you to know that I stand with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next individual, please. 155.
Request of Lisa to address council regarding vandalism in the Pearl District.
Good morning, Lisa. Keelan, do you have Lisa?
Yeah, it looks like Lisa is unmuted. Lisa, are you able to, if you need to unmute, try star six on your phone.
Okay.
All right. It looks like you just muted yourself again. We were hearing you for a moment.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we hear you loud and clear. Go ahead.
Dear ladies and gentlemen, I want to remain anonymous as I live in Portland's West End area. I have owned a small retail business on Southwest Broadway in downtown Portland since October 2012. Late Friday evening, May 29th, and early Saturday morning, May 30th, 2020, my store was vandalized and looted by the rioters that followed the George Floyd marchers. They stole my merchandise and vandalized my store. When I came to work Saturday morning, I saw the devastation done to my store and the entire Southwest Broadway block. My heart sank. I felt helpless. All I could do was cry. I called the police non-emergency line that day and was told the police were too busy to come to my store to take the report. I would have to file a police report online, which I did. As an Asian refugee who came to the United States in 1975, my proudest moments were when I became an American citizen 5 years later, obtained a college degree in 1984, and eventually owned a small business in 2012. The rioters shattered my small slice of heaven on that fateful day, May 30th, 2020. And I have suffered from low-grade depression and mild PTSD ever since. Whenever I read, see, or watch violent riots and protests in Portland that are shown on local news, it pains me because I feel the pain, fear, and anger coming all over again. Whether it was directed at my business or other businesses, I can feel their pains and anguish from having gone through it. The protests, the riots, the lootings, and vandalism did not stop on that day. It continues through last Friday, March 12, 2021. I come to you today representing other small business owners, other minority local business owners, and women business owners. I beg all of you to please do something about these senseless crimes that we're still experiencing. We all know this is not freedom of speech. This is pure freedom of hate and destruction. We small business owners are not wealthy people. we do not have an instant ATM from which we can repeatedly take money out to pay to have plywood boards put up, then taken down, remove graffiti, replace broken glass doors, glass windows, etc. Many small business owners and I donated our time to volunteer with Saul to clean up our downtown. It seems a futile task. I applaud all of you for your continued efforts this past weekend in dealing with the rioters. I know we must do more, and local small business owners are always ready to assist you. I do not want to live in fear every day and hide behind plywood windows and doors any longer. Thank you for listening to me, Lisa.
Thank you so much for being here today and share your perspective, because it's a very important one, and it's certainly one that I've been trying to communicate as broadly as possible, that this isn't just about some nameless, faceless corporation. These are small businesses. They're owned and operated by people like you who employ a lot of people in our community. And there is not a pot of money from which small business owners and operators can dip into in order to restore their business operations after they've been looted or damaged or graffitied or the windows have been broken or the inventory has been stolen. And so I want to apologize to you that you've had to go through this at all. I want you to know that this is absolutely a laser-focused priority of both this council and of my administration, that we are here to support you and that we will continue to do so. And I hope you will continue to share your voice to the degree that you feel comfortable sharing your voice, because it is an important perspective. And I really appreciate your being here, and I appreciate May's being here today. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Next individual, please, Keelan.
Item 156, request of Barbara Baczynski to address council regarding Hazelnut Grove Tiny Cabin Village.
Welcome, Barbara.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners and mayor. I am Barbara Baczynski, an Overlook neighborhood resident. I have been attending the Save Hazelnut Steering Committee meetings for the last few weeks, and I'm convinced that this village is a good addition to our neighborhood, adding to the safety not only of the residents there, but the neighborhood at large. I'll now show a video by one of the residents about the impact of Hazelnut Grove on her life. Lolita and her partner lost their housing when their building was sold.
Oh. Good morning, Commissioner and Mayor. I'm Lolita. I've lived at Hazelnut Grove since 2015. My partner and I lived in our van for 2 years. When we found Hazelnut site, we camped and joined with other residents and many neighbors and organizations building our tiny homes. Since living at Hazelnut Grove, I've been able to take care of many health needs and gotten Social Security. I even have a checking account and savings account. I couldn't get these things accomplished living on the streets. I found stability and I needed to move ahead with my life. I deal with bipolar and panic disorder, but here I've gotten the calm to be more out in the world. A stable home is necessary to me to keep me on my path. It may not always be here, but Hazelnut Grove sure has worked for me.
So the residents and their community friends have completed an RFPQ and submitted it to establish the rights of residents to remain in their homes. We are grateful for the suspension of your plans to demolish the village fencing and cabins. We also understand that the village is not comparable to other unsanctioned camps around the city. It's an organized, self-managed community which needs the status of permanence so that residents can continue to advance with the projects they've planned to improve their physical surroundings, and more importantly, the peace and stability all people need to make progress in their individual lives. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for sharing the video with us as well. Keelan, does that complete the communications for this morning?
Yes.
Very good. Thank you, everybody who participated today. We appreciate your perspectives, as always. Have any items been pulled off of the consent agenda?
We've had no requests.
Please call the roll on the consent agenda.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
Aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The consent agenda is adopted. We will go to the first time certain item, please. That's actually, it's not a time certain. I stand corrected. It's just the regular agenda. Item 159, please.
Accept bid of $4,986,018 from Stellar J Corporation for the Powell Butte Reservoir 1 roof upgrades project.
Colleagues, this is a procurement report for a Portland Water Bureau construction project that will repair and make improvements to the drainage system on the roof of Powell Butte Reservoir number 1. The two underground reservoirs at Powell Butte are an important part of the city's water system, together storing up to 100 million gallons of drinking water and providing a key safety net for our system to ensure a steady supply of clean water as demand changes throughout the course of the day. Chief Procurement Officer Kathleen Brunis-Marua is here to present this report. Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning, Mayor. Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Kathleen Brunis-Marua, the Interim Chief Procurement Officer, and I'm here to recommend authorization to enter into a contract with Stellar J Corporation for construction of the Powell Butte Reservoir 1 roof upgrades project. Council authorized procurement services to solicit and award a contract in August of 2020. We issued an invitation to bid on December 10th and received one responsive bid on January 26th. The responsive low bid is from Stellar J Corporation in the amount of $4,986,018, which is 3% under the project estimate of $5,140,000. The city's aspirational 20% subcontractor and supplier utilization goal applied. Stellar J exceeded the goal with a commitment to subcontract 38.44% to contractors certified with the Certification Office for Business Inclusion and Diversity, as identified in the report before you. Stellar J Corporation is in full compliance with all city contracting requirements, and I here recommend you authorize this contract. If there are any questions about the procurement process, I'm happy to answer them. If you have any questions about the project itself, Jody Inman, the Water Bureau Design Manager, and Dan Hogan, the Project Manager, are here to address those, as well as a representative from Stellar J is here and can address any questions about their good faith efforts in meeting the aspirational goal.
Thank you for the report. Beautiful background, by the way. And Commissioner Hardesty's first up. Commissioner.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Director. My question is, how many contracts has this contractor, Stellar J Corporation, had with the city of Portland, say in the last 5 years?
This contractor has had 6 other projects in the last 5 years.
And what's the total money amount of those 6 contracts?
And I apologize, I do not have that. I apologize, they did not tabulate that for me. So I've got about 20 million, approximately 20 million.
And so this is another $5 million contract. So there will be 25 million over a 5-year period of time. And the contractor doesn't appear to have found any Black, Latinx, indigenous contractors in 5 years of getting contracts with the city of Portland. In fact, this contract has only one minority firm that will get about $18,000 out of a $5 million contract. This is a continuing conversation that I continue to have with purchasing, and good faith notwithstanding, our outcomes are still horribly bad. What do you make of, you said this was the only responsible bidder. Did we have to take this contract? You only get one that's responsive?
We only received one bid. Stellar J was responsive to all of the bid requirements. So we did not have any grounds to reject the bid.
Well, I would think if you're going out for contracts, you're measuring them against each other. And if you only get one, I think that would, I think we, that's another thing that procurement will need to address. But let me just say, if somebody's gotten $30 million from the city of Portland and still has not been able to build relationships with minority contracting firms, I think that that is a problem. And I think that we have to fix that problem. We can't keep saying that we've done aspiration.
This is Jeff Burleson with Stiller Jacob. Jeff Burleson.
Sir, happy to give you an opportunity, but okay. I'm actually talking to procurement at the moment.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. So this is an ongoing issue with procurement, and I just wanted to flag that for my colleagues. At five contracts and 5 years, $30 million of work. And this is what we're accepting as an aspirational goal.
And I just want to say that it is an issue that we want to address, and we are going to be revisiting our subcontractor equity program to see how we can make changes to achieve better results with awarding contracts to BIPOC contractors.
With all due respect, we've been saying that for a long, 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 long time. And the proof is in the pudding, because here we have a contractor that we have a relationship with, and we've still not been able to achieve our goals. So I hear you, we're fixing it, but we got 14 programs and the outcomes continue to be the same.
Understood.
Jeff, did you have something to say on behalf of the Water Bureau there?
Yes, thank you. My name is Jeff Carlson. I'm a Stellar J Corporation. I'm the general manager and vice president. I wanted to thank you for the opportunity to address the council. One item I wanted to point out to all the commissioners and to the Bureau that recently I was afforded an audit that the on the equity and construction for Portland, which I can reference as the City Auditor Portland Audit Services that was issued in September, and I can forward it around if necessary. But Stiller J Corporation ranked number one in the subcontracting to minority and business firms. And one of the items that was found in the audit was the lack of recognition for those firms that were meeting the goals and exceeding the aspirational goals of the City Council. I do believe that we have a good working relationship with City Council, and we are doing our best to meet and exceed the goals of the that are set by Council. And I'm happy to forward the audit that was issued by Portland around. And to the extent that we can improve, I am more than willing to meet with the procurement office to make some suggestions or receive feedback that will improve our compliance. Thank you.
Thank you. Colleagues, any further questions? And if not, I'll entertain a motion. Commissioner Mapps, did you just move the, I couldn't hear that.
I just wanted to double check to see if there was any testimony on this, public testimony, or are we taking public testimony?
No, you're right,
never mind, thank you.
No worries. Is that a motion?
I move that we vote on this.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Mapps moves the report, I'll second. Any further discussion? Please call the roll.
Rubio?
Clearly, we're all very motivated to address and improve the city's requirements. So this is just, another call for that review. I'm looking forward to the future discussion about updating these goals and revisiting these processes to remove barriers and improve our outcomes. So I vote aye.
Ryan?
Aye.
Hardesty?
No.
Mapps?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The report's accepted. Thank you all for that discussion. It was an important one. Next up, item 160.
Approve application under the Multiple Unit Limited Tax Exemption Program under the Inclusionary Housing Program for Burnside Apartments located at 11005 East Burnside Street.
Commissioner Ryan.
Good morning, colleagues. Happy St. Patrick's Day. We have two multi-unit limited tax exemption applications today. Items 160 and 161 are both emergency ordinances and ask us to consider approving the multi-unit limited tax exemption applications for the Burnside Apartments and the 2231 Pettigrove. I request that these two items be read together. Keelan, could you read the second ordinance for the record as well?
Of course. Approve application under the Multiple Unit Limited Tax Exemption Program under the Inclusionary Housing Program for 2231 Pettigrove LLC, located at 2231 Northwest Pettigrove Street.
Thank you, Keelan. Colleagues, I will now be turning this item over for a detailed presentation, and I believe Matthew Scheipel, you're here to present.
Thank you, Commissioner Ryan, and good morning, members of council. For the record, my name is Matthew Schaubold. I am the Policy and Planning Manager with the Portland Housing Bureau. I also have with me Dory Van Bockel, who is the Development Incentives Manager for the Housing Bureau. So, as always, the city's mandatory inclusionary housing policy is an enactment of one of our comprehensive plan policies to integrate affordable housing into market rate development. At the Housing Bureau, we lead with race. And so, as always, we like to present where our neighborhoods are affordable for different communities across the city and drive our programs accordingly. As far as the program overall, I just wanted to give council a snapshot. I know that you saw some of this information at the budget work session yesterday. We update this information quarterly, but thus far we have seen, we are anticipating a little over 1,100 units, affordable units to come through this program, with the majority of those units affordable at 60% AMI. And as you know, just to, for the record, for folks watching, the city requirement is 80%, and we provide additional incentives in order to try and get developers to voluntarily provide 60% units. As far as the two projects that are here for approval today, for consideration today, as Commissioner Ryan mentioned, 2231 Northwest Pettigrove and 11005 East Burnside, and you can see here on our map of buildings and early assistance and permitting projects. Looking at the East Burnside project, this is a 29 unit, three-story building, and the developer has chosen the 15% of units at 80% AMI option. And so there will be four inclusionary housing units at 80% AMI. I do want to note that currently in this neighborhood, the market rate rents are fairly comparable to what the inclusionary housing rent caps are, but we are recommending this for approval given that the inclusionary housing program is a long-term land use program. And as rents continue to rise, these four units will remain affordable at 80% of the median income, regardless of where the market goes. And then for the 2231 Northwest Pettigrove, this is a 30 unit building. And the developer has opted to provide 15% of the units at 80% AMI, which will yield five inclusionary housing units. And the Housing Bureau is also recommending approval of this multi-application, given that the rent savings that will be seen by renters already exceeds the value of the property tax exemption on a per unit basis. With that, Dory and I are here to answer any questions that council has.
Colleagues, any questions at this point? It looks like you're off the hook for the moment. Matt, do we have any public testimony on this item?
We have no one signed up for this item.
Very good. This is an emergency ordinance. Please call the roll.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Yes, the Burnside Apartments and 2231 Pettigrove bring the total number of private sector buildings in the inclusionary housing permit approval pipeline to 120, restricting a minimum of 953 units in an otherwise market rate developments. I vote aye.
Hardesty.
Are we voting on one or both?
We're voting on 161 at the moment.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted.
Next. Oh, wait, I messed up. We're voting on 161, right? Sorry.
Now we'll call. Bring up 161, please.
I believed you, Commissioner.
I'm sorry. I messed up. Get used to it.
Rubio.
Aye.
Ryan.
Aye.
Hardesty.
I'm looking forward to the changes that we're going to make to the multi-program to make it more equitable, more fair, and to give us a better outcome. I vote aye.
Maps.
Aye.
Wheeler.
Aye. The ordinance is adopted. Next item, please.
Authorize new construction financing not to exceed $14,926,500 to Rosewood Stark Limited Partnership or a Human Solutions Inc. affiliate for development of a 93-unit affordable housing project.
Commissioner Ryan.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I'm happy to make this presentation, get it started. The Stark Street Housing Development combines Portland Housing Bond capital funding with funding from supportive services from the Joint Office of Homelessness Services to provide housing for some of our most vulnerable residents. This project brings much needed affordable housing and supportive services to outer Southeast Portland, where too many families are experiencing housing instability, school mobility challenges, and displacement. With this project, we continue to deliver on the promise to the voters who approved the city's first affordable housing bond, and we align with our community's priorities to create more permanently affordable housing in underserved areas, prevent displacement, and create more housing solutions that meet the needs of families and address homelessness. We thank the developer, Human Solutions, Inc., for increasing housing opportunities for low-income families, and especially for providing permanent supportive housing, which is one of the most critical tools in addressing homelessness. Stark Street Housing will help to meet the critical needs of residents in Rosewood area of the Glenfair neighborhood. This happens to be in the Reynolds School District. There's Glenfair Elementary, there's H.B. Lee Middle, and Reynolds High School. There's a full service grocery stores and transit options. With that, I'd like to turn this over to Director Callahan and to Andy Miller, the ED of Human Solutions. Welcome to the meeting, Director Callahan and Andy Miller. Take it away.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. Shannon Callahan, the Director of the Portland Housing Bureau. Keelan, if you wouldn't mind putting up the slide deck for us this morning, I'd appreciate it. So the Stark Street apartments, next slide please, is one of 12 housing bond projects. It joins two projects that are already opened, and it will be the fifth to begin construction. Next slide please, Keelan. The Stark Street with its five-story building will be bring much needed affordable housing to outer Southeast Portland, made possible by Human Solutions and LifeWorks Northwest. Next slide, please. It's located at 160th and Southeast Stark, as you heard in the Rosewood area, and it does offer easy access to grocery stores, service, and transit for its residents. It will also serve low-income families, as well as people moving from homelessness into permanent affordable housing. Next slide, please. With 93 affordable units, it will house an estimated 221 people. It will also provide its resident families a wonderful children's play area, which is envisioned here on this slide. Human Solutions expects to begin construction this May and welcome families next fall. Next slide, please. The Stark Street housing project will have a significant number of 2 and 3 bedroom units. 33% of all units will be affordable to people and families who make less than 30% of area median income. For a family of four, that would mean a family that earns less than $27,000 per year. And as the Commissioner Ryan noted, it'll also contain 16 units of permanent supportive housing. Next slide. In addition to the capital funding provided by the Portland Housing Bureau, the Joint Office of Homeless Services is committed to providing service funding for the 16 units of permanent supportive housing. Human Solutions will bring its excellent resident services like family advocacy and case management to the residents of the building. And LifeWorks Northwest will provide mental health services and health navigation services. Next slide, please. The funding from the Portland Housing Bond will leverage another $24 million in funding to ensure affordable housing for the 220 plus residents now and for decades to come. And next slide, please. Your approval today will finance and move this project into the construction phase so that families can be welcome next year. And before I turn it over to Andy Miller, the Executive Director of Human Solutions, I'd like to acknowledge some of the team members who kept this project on track alongside the Human Solutions development team, and in particular, Danielle Norby and Lindsay Brown. And now, Andy, over to you.
Thank you, Shannon. Mayor Wheeler, members of the council, good morning, or perhaps today I should say top of the morning to you. For the record, my name is Andy Miller, and I do have the privilege of serving as the Executive Director of Human Solutions. We are one of your partners countering the forces causing poverty and homelessness in East Portland and East Multnomah County. I feel fortunate this morning that my first appearance before this current version of Portland City Council is to say thank you. Thank you in advance for what I hope will be a vote to make this important project possible. Commissioner Ryan and Director Callahan provided a good summary of our Stark Street housing project, on which we do hope to break ground early this summer, right on the heels of completing the Nick Fish Apartments. That's our latest project in Gateway, also with the support of the City of Portland through TIF funding. And we're, as I speak, we're wrapping up construction and leasing that project up right now. All I really want to add to Shannon's presentation, in addition to my thanks to the Housing Bureau, the Council, and to the voters of Portland for passing the Portland Housing Bond, are a few highlights on why this project is so important to us at Human Solutions and to the East Portland communities we serve and support. As was mentioned, the 16 units of permanent supportive housing will help to meet an urgent need. As many of you know, we as an organization are the operator of shelter for families with children experiencing homelessness, many of them chronically, and we see every day how few real options there are for families who have experienced long-term homelessness to find secure, real, affordable housing in a community of support. We believe this project will meet that need. And I want to pause for a moment and really call out the great work here that happened upstream. The collaboration between PHB, the Joint Office for Homeless Services, and Home Forward to braid together the critical resources that make this kind of housing possible is a national best practice. Coordinating those resources upstream and not at the project level is really the way to get this work done. And it allows not one project at a time to be done, but several from one procurement that can provide the deep affordability and on-site fully funded services needed to make real permanent supportive housing possible. It's not easy work. We are deeply appreciative that it happened, and bravo for putting together a procurement process that aligned these resources and made this work possible. We urge our funding partners to continue this practice. The Stark Street Housing Project is also important to us and to our community because it advances our goal of becoming an anti-racist organization. By exceeding contracting targets for both hard costs and professional services, Human Solutions and our fantastic partners at Colas Construction ensured that we mean business when we say that Black and Brown businesses should benefit and benefit meaningfully from our community's historic investment in affordable housing. And finally, we also believe this project is critically important to help stem the tide of residential displacement that has impacted our Black and Brown communities now residing in East Portland. We've worked hard behind the scenes to coordinate closely with our community partners, including ERCO, the Rosewood Initiatives, as well as our partners at the Reynolds School District, to help ensure that local families in Rosewood, and as I think many of you know, Rosewood is one of the most diverse areas of our city. It's also a neighborhood that's been deeply impacted by poverty and threatened by the next wave of residential displacement. We believe that the on-the-ground coordination well in advance of this project even breaking ground will result in many local families and families of color finding a permanent home and experiencing the supportive community at Stark Street. When affordable housing like this emerges from a true community development process, as this project has, it should become not just an asset of its developing organization, but truly one that the community helped design and program. As you might recall, this particular housing community will emerge on a piece of land we purchased with the help and support of Multnomah County 6 years ago. At that time, the bar on the property was a community problem spot. We partnered with Multnomah County to purchase the property for the purpose of converting it from a neighborhood problem spot to a sign of hope for change. Over the short term, we converted the bar that was on the site into an interim shelter for families. That shelter has now moved over into a more permanent space in Southeast Portland that we now operate as Lilac Meadows, our family shelter, keeping 40 families safe off the streets every night. But the destiny of this property was always intended as permanent affordable housing, what the neighbors told us they wanted and needed. Today, I urge you to complete the story for this property by providing the resources to turn what was once a neighborhood eyesore into a community of hope in which families and this neighborhood of survivors can have the permanent homes and beautiful building they not only need, but deserve. We're excited to see not only what this one-time apartment construction can deliver to the Rosewood community, but also what we can together deliver over the next decade to come to this neighborhood in East Portland. Thanks so much.
Very good. Commissioner Hardesty has a question.
Thank you, Mayor. First, I just want to put on the public record that I am a board member, a very happy board member of Hayman Solutions, and am thrilled that this project has moved forward. Andy stole what I was going to say because I was going to remind people that this used to be a vegan strip club, whatever that is. And it had, in fact, been an eyesore for a very, very long time in this community. I am thrilled, especially with how hard we came through when it was a shelter for families that were experiencing houselessness. And it was a family shelter. So it really showed us how many people were working 2, 3, 4 jobs and still couldn't afford first, last security deposit, and pet rent to live in the city of Portland. I am so proud of the work that Hayman Solutions does. And I know Shannon has been, Director Callahan has been a fabulous partner with Hayman Solutions for many years. The community needs this affordable housing complex. And one of the things I love about the housing that Hayman Solutions builds is this beautiful housing. And you never know by outside what the socioeconomic status of the individuals are who live inside. And isn't that a fabulous legacy to have in this community? So thank you, Director Callahan. Thank you, Andy Miller. I know the pain that it takes to put financing together to build housing that's truly affordable for people in our community. And I've watched Hayman Solutions do it over the last 12 years. And honestly, it's a miracle that any of these projects come forward and get funded, but it's because of the dedicated people who spend a lot of time trying to patch together funding to make these kind of buildings a reality. So I just wanted to put that on the record from my personal experience and with Hayman Solutions and the work I know they continue to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Does that complete the presentation?
Yes, Mayor, that concludes our presentation. Thank you.
All right, very good. Is there any public testimony on this item?
No one signed up for this item.
Very good. Colleagues, any further questions? If not, please call the roll.
Rubio?
Thank you. I want to thank Human Solutions and also just, you know, echo my colleagues' comments about their great record of partnership. They've been a great partner to other nonprofits. I know that firsthand from my prior life, and just want to acknowledge their tremendous work and impact in the community. Also want to thank ERCO, Rosewood Initiative, Reynolds School District, and the East Portland Area Plan Housing Subcommittee. Also PHB and the Joint Office and the rest of our community partners that were connected to this project and will be connected to this project. Our CBO partners are the ones that should be leading this work because they are trusted. And they also know firsthand the needs of each particular community and are responsive to those needs. And housing collaborations like this are successful when the table is set by and with the community from the onset. So I say bravo to that. And also these types of projects are exactly what we need to meet our goals and meet the demand in housing across all levels. So I vote aye.
Ryan?
Yes, thank you again. Thanks, Andy Miller, for that presentation and acknowledging all the different partners that came on board. It was great to see some of the philanthropic partners as well, like Meyer Memorial Trust. I also want to just once again underscore how important it is to have the family units and with schools nearby. School mobility issues are really, really one of the biggest factors and challenges for children and families. Sometimes 75% of the kids in low-income neighborhoods rotate to another school within the school year. Imagine how challenging that would be to actually get some grounding and some education to move on in life. So I was really delighted to see its access to schools and the services provided for the families. I vote aye.
Hardesty?
Fabulous project. Can't wait for the groundbreaking and for families to move in. And again, I just want to appreciate the level of work that's required to make a project like this real. I vote aye.
Max?
I echo the praise of all of my colleagues. This is a really exciting project. I want to thank Human Solutions, city staff, and the community for help making this happen. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
Great work. Aye. The ordinance is adopted. Thank you, everybody. Next item, please, Kevin.
Authorized new construction financing not to exceed $17,037,077 to CCC West Wind Apartments Limited Partnership or a Central City Concern affiliate for development of a 100-unit affordable housing project.
Commissioner Ryan.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. The Westwood Apartments is the fifth project funded by voter-approved Portland Housing Bond, which weaves the PHB's capital funds with much-needed funding for supportive services, once again with the Joint Office for Homeless Services to provide housing for our most vulnerable residents. This 100-unit project will help meet the critical needs of Old Town with 92 units of housing for extremely low-income residents, 70 of which are designated as supportive housing for high-need individuals exiting houselessness. These homes are all within a few blocks of the Richard L. Harris Building and the Old Town Recovery Center, both of which provide wraparound services to stabilize new tenants transitioning from living on the streets and into permanent housing. We are pleased to continue delivering on the promises to the voters who approved Portland's first ever affordable housing bond. The project alone represents 23% of the bond's goal for new supportive housing units, which is by itself a considerable achievement. We thank the development team of Central City Concern for their valued partnership in our efforts as a city to house our chronically houseless neighbors with dignity and stability. And with bringing forward this project during these uncertain times when supporting supportive housing is needed more than ever. With that, I'll turn this over once again to Director Callahan and her partner in this, Mary Rain O'Mara from Central City Concern. Take it away.
Thank you, Commissioner Ryan, and good morning once again, Shannon Callahan for the Portland Housing Bureau. Keelan, if you wouldn't mind putting the slide deck up, please. As we've just gone over, there are 12 total housing bond projects identified or open or in various stages of construction, and the West Wind will join this cadre of projects to open later next year. Next slide, please. The West Wind is located in the Old Town neighborhood and replaces a unsafe structure that was housing residents, low-income residents for many years. Next slide, please. The building itself will add to the tapestry of the Old Town neighborhood with a beautiful new development and a small portion of the ground floor available for retail to help create a more vibrant and culturally rich environment in the Old Town neighborhood. Next slide, please. Each one of the housing bond projects brought by our developers have unique challenges. And I will say that the West Wind has been a project with an extreme number of challenges that we all knew when we decided to purchase the existing building that this beautiful building will replace. We worked with our bond oversight committee to support the purchase and acquisition of the existing building, and I'd like to thank them for their unwavering support. And also acknowledge the team of Central City Concern and the Housing Bureau that worked with the existing residents at the West Wind to get them into safe, stable housing while we made way for this new new development. So the site itself offers wonderful transit located at 6th Avenue in the Old Town neighborhood. And it is targeted for, as you heard from the commissioner, very low income households who are homeless or exiting homelessness. Next slide, please. It will be a new 7-story building with 100 units of affordable housing, anticipated to house 100 high needs individuals. The priority communities it will serve, as you've heard, are those who are exiting homelessness, with a particular emphasis on Black and Native American individuals. There'll be targeted support services from Central City Concern as well as NARA. Next slide, please. All of the units are studios or SROs, single room occupancy units. We've been reimagining how single room occupancy units can serve the community and help us reach some of our goals to end chronic homelessness. This building will have 70 units of permanent supportive housing with rent and service support. 92 of the units will be for residents at 30% of area median income or below. So for those residents who have no incomes or those with very modest incomes, like from Social Security disability. 8 of the units will serve residents at 60% AMI or below, and the building will be regulated for 99 years, providing decades of permanent affordability and permanent supportive housing in our community. Next slide, please. The joint office will provide support services funding. Home Forward will provide rent assistance. As you've heard, NARA will provide culturally specific support, specifically for up to 20 residents, and Central City Concern will wrap around those services. As you heard from Andy Miller a little earlier, one of the new ways that the Housing Bureau has gone about doing business in the last 3 years is to do intensive work upfront to collaborate with our funding partners so that developers are able to apply for capital, rent assistance, and support services dollars all at once. This is a change in how we used to do business, which frankly It was very complex, even more complex for the development teams, and projects would sometimes languish for years before they were able to compile those funds. So by doing the work together on the front end, we're able to move these projects more speedily into actual operation for those who really need it. Next slide, please. In addition to Portland Housing Bond funds, I'd like to particularly acknowledge Multnomah County. Multnomah County contributed over $4 million of the proceeds of the sale of Wapato, the former jail in North Portland, to ensure that we were able to bring this building online. Their funds went to the actual acquisition of the property, as well as augmenting some of the additional demolition costs. I did not know this, but this apparently was a site of a gasometer. I'll let you, Mary Rain O'Meara, talk a little bit more about that, but an old, very complex basement system. And so the additional funding from Multnomah County has really made this project possible. Our funds from the Portland Housing Bureau and Multnomah County are able to leverage an additional $17 million in private funding. Next slide, please. The action today will both provide the funding and actually transfer the land officially to the Central City Concern Partnership. And before I turn it over to Mary Rain O'Meara of Central City Concern, as I mentioned, I just wanted to thank our Bond Oversight Committee for really their support of this very complex project. To our team at the Housing Bureau, John Marshall, Jill Chen, and Molly Rogers, and in particular to Cheyenne Sheehan, who worked with the residents at the West Wind over a course of 2 years to help them transition to new housing before we could undertake this development. And of course, to Central City Concern, who helped us manage the building and those residents during the time of transition and has worked on this extremely complex project to make 100 permanent homes for formerly homeless individuals. So with that, Mary Rain.
Thank you so much, Director Callahan, and good morning, commissioners. For the record, my name is Mary Rain O'Meara, and I'm the Director of Real Estate Development at Central City Concern. It is such an honor to be here today for this very important milestone of the West Wind Supportive Housing Development. This project, as you heard, has been many years in the making with its unique mix of challenges, including, as Director Callahan mentioned, this is a historic site. A hotel has been on the quarter block since the early 1900s. And our discoveries to date have been interesting and have definitely put us all on our toes. So I just want to take a moment to thank my fellow colleagues at Central City Concern, our partners at the Portland Housing Bureau, Oregon Housing and Community Services, and the Joint Office of Homeless Services, and finally, our tax credit investor and lender team at US Bank for being such tremendous partners to get us here today. So the reason we develop housing at Central City Concern is to interrupt cycles of homelessness by providing access to essential stabilizing services. The West Wind will provide homes for 100 households who will benefit from these services provided by CCC and our partners at the Native American Rehabilitation Association, or NARA. When we started planning for the project in 2019, chronic homelessness was already on the rise in Portland, as you all know. Today, we see the effects of the pandemic exacerbating this dire need for affordable housing. The West Wind will assist in the city's pandemic recovery by revitalizing this quarter block site in Old Town and by ensuring that all tenants receive the help they need to be healthy and resilient for decades to come. Through our partnership with Walsh Construction as the general contractor on the project, we are on track to achieve the 30% MWESB equity and contracting goals, and our soft cost contractors on the project are just over 70% of MWESB achievement. So in closing, on behalf of Central City Concern, we thank you all for your ongoing support and leadership in bringing projects like the West Wind to fruition in our city and we'll look forward to celebrating the building opening with all of you in 2022.
And that concludes our presentation. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, colleagues. Any questions at this point? Seeing none, as always, it was thorough. Excellent work. Keelan, any public testimony on this side?
No one signed up for this item.
This is an emergency ordinance. Please call the roll.
Rubio?
What a fake Central City concern for bringing this really important project forward and for your continued great work with our vulnerable communities, as well as the deep appreciation that we all have, I know, on council for all the partners of this project. And I also want to lift up the important focus in the project on our vulnerable Black and Indigenous populations and the partnerships established to be responsive to all these community needs. It's a much needed project, and congratulations on all your hard work. I vote aye.
Ryan?
Yes, thank you for that lovely presentation. This project is one of many steps we're taking as a city to reduce chronic houselessness, particularly in the Old Town neighborhood, an area that has seen quite a spike in recent years. This project also comes as a result of tremendous collaboration, which was told by both of the presenters. And I just want to once again call out the Joint Office of Houselessness Services, U.S. Bank, the Oregon Housing and Community Services, of course, Central City Concern, and your partnership with NARA. Thank you to Director Callahan for your leadership and PHB for your tireless efforts in bringing this project to fruition. I vote aye.
Hardesty?
I want to thank Director Callahan once again. These are the kind of programs that bring me joy when they come to the City Council. I tend to be really frustrated with a lot of the multi-programs. Central City Concern has been a strong, strong partner with the City of Portland for at least three decades, if not more. And this project is no exception. I am very grateful to the hard work that it takes to bring these kind of projects together. And it is not lost on me how effective our community partners in building housing have been and actually obtaining contractors that represent the diverse community that we experience. So I just want to put a note in that, because earlier we heard for somebody who's been doing it for 5 years hasn't been as successful as people who are building not housing that people can afford to live in. So I want to appreciate not just your focus on who lives in the housing, but who has the opportunity to build the housing, who has the opportunity to get economic stability, and Central City Concern continues to be a model of that. Thank you very much for this project. I enthusiastically vote aye.
Max?
I'd like to thank Central City Concern, city staff, and other partners for bringing this important project forward. I vote aye.
Wheeler?
This is an exciting day, and I realize there's nothing on the agenda this morning that brings a lot of public interest, perhaps, but I can't underscore the importance of this project, not only the partnerships that are in place between the Housing Bureau and Central City Concern, but this is also making good on a promise that we made some time ago, that we were going to acknowledge that the traditional model of the SRO was inadequate to the challenges of the present, that we were going to reinvent the model of the SRO with the goal of bringing people off the street, connecting them to critical services that they need to be successful in that housing, to acknowledge that this is really a first step for a lot of people on their road to recovery and sufficiency through partnership with organizations like Central City Concern that connect them with the resources they need to be successful. And I believe this will ultimately be a best practice model that we will not only continue to replicate and build upon here in the city of Portland, I believe this is a model that other jurisdictions around the nation will ultimately take note of. Obviously, the lion's share of the work rests ahead, but Director Callahan, when you look back where we started with this, is just a potential real estate opportunity some time ago We've come a long way, and that's due to the great work of our city employees. And I want to thank you for that. Again, to our steadfast partners at Central City Concern, thank you for all you do to help reclaim and recover lives in this community. And this is just going to be one more great example where the community comes together to make good things happen. Very happy to vote aye. The ordinance is adopted. Next item, our last item for this morning, item 164.
Amend contract with HDR Engineering, Inc. for additional support services for the Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant Renewable Natural Gas Facility Project number E10033 for $283,039.
Commissioner Mapps.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and colleagues. In our time together on this council, we have reviewed 164 items. All of them have been important, but the item that we're about to learn about today is one of my favorite. And let me tell you why. This project began about 4 years ago. That's when a previous council gave the green light to a brilliant environmental services initiative designed to fight climate change. Today, Environmental Services code name for this initiative is the Renewable Natural Gas Project, but some old timers on this council probably remember this as Nick Fish's Poop to Power Project. For those of you unfamiliar with this project, this is how it works. Environmental Services is building a facility which will take poop from Portlanders, process it, extract out some natural gas, which can then be used for good things like replacing dirty diesel in commercial vehicles. Environmental Services has been building and testing out its new poop to power setup and has successfully produced clean fuels. The testing phase has also identified some things that we need to get improved upon. Ultimately, this project will reduce carbon pollution by 21,000 tons a year, which makes Poop to Power the city of Portland's largest climate change infrastructure project. And there's even more good news. This project is also a new revenue source for the city. Environmental Services has customers for the green fuels we're about to produce, and they have a way to get those new fuels to market. So here today to tell us more about this fun and exciting project is Paul Souto, Engineering Manager with Environmental Services. Paul, please take over.
Thank you for the terrific introduction, Commissioner Mapps. Can everyone hear me okay and see my presentation? Great, thank you. All right, good morning, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. For the record, I'm Paul Souto, Engineering Manager with BES. So I'll just get right into the presentation here. Make sure I get the right. Gotta figure out how to advance slides now. There we go. All right, so just wanna start at the source of how we got into this project, and starts with our community's treatment plant in North Portland, the Columbia Boulevard Wastewater Treatment Plant. It is the largest treatment plant in the state of Oregon, and thereby it actually produces a tremendous amount of biogas. So I think the key highlight here is we produce about 1.6 million cubic feet of biogas on a daily basis, which it's hard to kind of scale that, but it's a tremendous amount. So that's what gives us this opportunity for the Poop to Power project to produce a renewable fuel from that gas. So this is our slide that shows the triple win for Poop to Power, the three benefits that, Commissioner Mapps noted, we were about 4 years into this. We came before council 4 years ago with this statement of reducing impacts to climate with the greenhouse gas reductions around 21,000, generating revenue upwards of $3 million a year, and clean air in how much diesel vehicles we can offset, about 1.34 million gallons. And there, I just want to highlight, that's an illustration. We're not actually planning to, we don't have a program to replace specific trucks within the city, but the fuel that we're producing has that opportunity. So I just want to just highlight, this is what we said we were going to do 4 years ago, and we're still on track. We're just tweaking things during the final stages of project startup, and that's why I'm here to ask for this ordinance. So I wanted to also acknowledge that this was a very important project to the late Commissioner Fish. Here he is at the compressed natural gas fueling station opening back in March of 2018. It was Commissioner Fish and his son, Chapin, who coined that phrase that many people really like to hear, the poop to power. So I just wanted to acknowledge that for you all from a commissioner's lineage here. All right. So just why are we doing this project? And it's, pretty simple. We wanted to come up with a project where we were still flaring gas at Columbia Boulevard. So we wanted to maximize the recovery of that methane gas and find the most beneficial use for the ratepayers, the citizens and so forth, the community, the climate. This has been an innovative project for us. It's one of the few in the country, frankly, not many examples. So we had to look at the risk of balance of risk and reward for this and get and also align with the city's policies, including the climate action plan. So just as kind of a primer on, the technical stuff here, I'm not gonna get too technical, of course, but how is this possible from the treatment plant? So I'll just start with what biogas is. Excuse me, it's about 60% methane, and that's the key part of this. So, and that's produced as we break down the solids, or which is primarily the poop part of it, as Commissioner Mapps mentioned in his intro. So as this poop is broken down in these large tanks called digesters, so these are heated up, and we grow these bacteria in there, they break it down, and they produce biogas as they stabilize those solids. So what we're doing now with this project is taking that biogas and refining it, or extracting some of these impurities and making a pipeline specification natural gas. This chart shows our current utilization of biogas prior to the poop to power project. I just want to highlight here, we had been flaring about 23% through our waste gas burners or flares. 41% has been used at our cogeneration, which produces electricity and heat that's beneficially used. And then the remaining 16% on site is used in our processed boilers for heat as well. And then 20% is used offsite by an industrial business. So one thing I want to highlight is as we got into this project, from the beginning, what we learned is this was his vehicle fuel option. The best benefit is to actually utilize all of our gas. So we started with just focusing on the 23%, but then we soon realized for the triple bottom line, the triple win, so to speak, for revenue, climate, and community is really to use it all, as it's more beneficial than these other options we've been using on site. All right, so now I just wanted to touch on the other city goals, how it aligns with the climate action plan and renewable energy goals. So just a quick little highlight in the 2015 update to the climate action plan, there is a goal to reduce CO2 emissions by 40% by the year 2030, and it's 80% by the year 2050. And also there's an objective to reduce the life cycle carbon emissions of transportation fuels by 20%. So that's a key part here, since we're focusing this on transportation fuels. And there's also the 100% renewable energy goals resolution that the city passed. So this helps meet those goals. We're basically adding a renewable fuel that can help meet these goals. And this photo here shows one of our fleet vehicles at the Columbia Boulevard treatment plant at the fueling station that was installed, where we're fueling with compressed natural gas. And then once this facility comes online, it'll be renewable natural gas. All right, just a couple of more highlights here in terms of other city goals. It aligns with the city's comprehensive plan for air quality and the solid waste and recycling goals as well. All right, so how are we doing this project? Photo and kind of cartoon element is intended to describe this. So if you follow me along here, the biogas is produced, as I mentioned before, the digesters, that's these large tanks. Shown in the yellow coloring. And these are just for scale. They're about 2.5 million gallons each. So they're tremendous in size. That's because the process is slow. It takes about at least 15 days for the solids, the poop, to be treated in these tanks. But in that process, they produce that good amount of methane. And the project is really about this green line here. That's the processing facility that we built and are fine tuning now. We produced a renewable natural gas, and then it gets into the Northwest Natural Distribution System, And then I also wanted to highlight, we've got the fueling station here on site. And the great thing here is from an opportunity standpoint is, as you know, as many of you know, probably know, North Portland's been challenged with air quality. So this is, means the city and the Bureau, we can do our part to at least clean up our fleet emissions and use this clean burning renewable natural gas in our fleet out there, and also potentially with our partners that fuel at the plant as well that we contract with. So I think it's a great opportunity there. This slide is just kind of an aerial that shows some similar things. So I already highlighted the fueling station, the production facility that's kind of in the corner here. Columbia Boulevard is on the top part of this slide here, and the Northwest Natural main is that yellow line. So essentially we're building this facility. We've got some pipelines in place that go through this custody transfer or receipt facility that Northwest Natural has built. And that's basically how they make sure we meet their gas quality. So once it meets that their gas quality, it's officially in their system. And that's what this kind of purple line is shown here. So that's kind of the overview on the system. So the exciting thing for me at least is we finally got photos to show what this stuff looks like. 4 years ago, it was mainly schematics and kind of what it might look like. So this is the heart of the system. It's a water-based system, and that's what these large tanks here are, that basically under pressure, they scrub is the term, the gas. So it gets the carbon dioxide out of it and some trace constituents. The equipment in the background here is a second stage that was added at times. We may need it to meet the specification by Northwest Natural, and the white kind of rectangular container here is where additional equipment is needed, instruments to monitor it and so forth. So you can see we've really shoehorned this facility into the Columbia Boulevard site there. And there's the railroad there, the BNSF railroad. Some additional key equipment, just to give you an idea like the scale of this equipment and what this project is about. It's a lot of equipment that needed to be integrated. So there's a booster compressor that takes the biogas from our digesters, adds more pressure and sends it to that scrubber system that's actually shown in the background here. And then I wanted to highlight here, this is called a regenerative thermal oxidizer, the RTO. So in this process, we have an off-gas stream that isn't the product gas that goes to that needs to be safely discharged. So this is essentially a big oven that safely converts the that off-gas stream for discharge into the atmosphere. All right, so moving on to just kind of a overview of the financials for the project. We're at all in with all the components from construction, the work with Northwest Natural, the fueling station, design and so forth, we're just north of $22 million. Our revenue range is expected to be between $3 to $8 million. The current market's around $5 million, so it's still a pretty healthy market for us. We did get an Oregon Department of Energy tax credit to offset the fueling station cost, and that was a pass-through with Northwest Natural. So currently our payback's around 5 years. In our original target, we were still in that 48 year. We're targeting 48 years. So financially, this is still looking very good for us. So now I'll get to construction status. We are in what's called the startup and testing phase, the commissioning phase. The construction contractor, just wanted to highlight, has earned about $12 million. So we're about $12 million into construction. And the design contractor is what I'm here for, is HDR engineering. And they're the engineer of record. And we need their support to help us get some new things that have emerged sorted out so we can get this project wrapped up. So, and that stems from this incident that happened back in November while we were testing and fine tuning this system. But I want to just kind of give a little jump back to August of last year. We did run this facility without this second stage system that I pointed out earlier, what's called the vacuum pressure swing absorption system. As I said, it's not something that's needed all the time, but during certain conditions, we have it there. So during that time in August, we were able to run the system and meet the specifications of Northwest Natural. So that was our first positive sign that, hey, the system's working. And then this VPSA system, it took a while to get it going because it was primarily COVID-19 delays from this. The manufacturer is based out of Portugal, so they could not travel. And we had to do testing remotely for it, which complicated things further. So in November, early November, November 2nd, we did testing on that. And shortly after startup, there was a sequence of events in that startup that led to an overpressurization of the piping. So the piping ruptured and we did have damage to equipment there. I did want to point out that overall, this was a minor issue. There was no safety incidents or anything like that, but it reminded us of, we need to kind of, you know, cross our T's, dot our I's, so to speak, from a safety standpoint. So even with this unique condition that happens, we need to engineer that out. So that's what the scope of support we have for HDR is needed. So there's an investigation component where we need their support. And we also have to do a what's called a HAZOP in the industry, a hazard and operability reassessment, to kind of engineer out, find out what changes we need to make to ensure safety of the system, and then ultimately do the design changes that come from that. I did want to point out, we did add a couple of things that came up since even construction began, and that's this sub-metering for natural gas and power, and that has to do with our compliance requirements that were added in 2020. So last year we found out that this is needed to meet our compliance points for selling this as a renewable fuel. And then we also learned that our air pressure system wasn't as reliable as we had originally anticipated. So we needed to have a dedicated air compressor system for this. And that's really to give us more certainty for uptime so we can be more consistent with producing this fuel, which helps us with our revenue and the climate benefits. All right, so now the numbers for the contract. This project has been going on for a while, even before construction, since it was new and innovative. So I just want to highlight here, we have had a number of amendments. We're at number 8 here. Just pointing out that original contract amount of just under $300,000 was really just scope for pre-design. So we didn't know what we were doing with this gas at the time. We thought we might add more cogen. So we just started with a clean slate. And we didn't know what the final design would look like in construction. So we didn't scope it out for that. We just wanted to go do our due diligence and do that analysis. So then once we learned it was going to be vehicle fuel, we scoped it out primarily in Amendment 2 here. That was a big jump, about $1 million to add final design and bidding and construction services. We had some kind of schedule changes here, time extensions. We did add a state certified ESB sub to the contract early on too. And then in construction, we've had some previous increases, and these are things we learned during construction as we got into construction. Some of them were permit changes that we weren't aware of as well. So just kind of highlighting all of this. So this amendment number 8 for $283,000, $283,039, bringing the total contract to just above $2 million. And then the DMW ESB participation, or disadvantaged minority, women-owned, and emerging small business participation. These are the firms listed and their COVID classifications and where they are with Amendment 8 that's on the table here. And the column here on the right is a total amount for the contract that they received. So the contract amount total now is about 19.7%. We're at 20% prior to the amendment, and this amendment was about 17.9%, and I will basically stop here to see if there is any questions that I can answer. So thank you.
Very good. Colleagues, any questions? Not seeing any at this point. Is this the appropriate place for public testimony, or did you have more with regard to your presentation?
I have nothing else, Mayor.
All right, very good. Keelan, do we have public testimony on this item?
We have no one signed up, Mayor.
All right, anything else, colleagues, on this item before I move it to second? This is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. Great presentation, really appreciate it. Thank you, and thank you, Commissioner, for bringing it forward. And that completes our business this morning. Colleagues, we are adjourned until 2 p.m.